All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Samim Erdoğan. I am a program manager in the RDV group. So like Adam was saying, we're going to talk about what the VDI infrastructure in Windows Server 2012 looks like. Were any of you in the remote FX session yesterday at noon? All right. Wow, that half of the room. That's kind of interesting. And what about the consumerization of IT foundation session? That was also yesterday. All right. Cool. Well, so those of you who were in the consumerization of IT session, or those of you dealing with this right now, consumerization of IT, this is a very familiar picture for you. So, you know, this concept of consumer devices or consumerization of IT, you know, until recently, it was mostly manifesting itself as a mobility phenomenon. If you think about, you know, 5-6 years ago with, you know, laptops getting kind of slimmer and more powerful and kind of coming into the mainstream, corporations were giving laptops as work PCs to their users, and users were really kind of getting comfortable with the idea and starting to take advantage of this idea of, oh, you know, I don't have to be at work in order to get work done. I can be at home, I can be elsewhere, and I can use this work PC to gain access and to do my work. And right around that time, we were also seeing, you know, I want to use my own personal device while I'm at home. I don't want to use this work PC anymore. I want to use my own computer, my Mac, my PC to connect back to work. So just around the time where mobility was becoming an issue, also we were seeing remote access. So, you know, my personal device, I want to get back to the corpnet while I'm away from my office. Now this is all coming full circle. Those users who had those personal devices, now they're coming into the offices and they're bringing those devices, those personal devices, and they're requesting, they're more than requesting, they're demanding that they can get productive work done on these personal devices with these tablets. So over this transition, mobility, you know, adding on to remote access and now bring your own device, what stayed common, or what kind of the secular trend here was increased user control. Users are having more and more control over what device they use, the IT infrastructure that they're going to use, and they're demanding this control. Now, this on the outset is coming in conflict with, or coming at the expense of the control that you would like to have, the control that IT has to ensure data security, ensure compliance. So there is an inherent conflict here. The more you control that users have, if nothing else is done, the less control IT has, and, you know, there's really no way to cut this knot. Well, VDI, the promise of VDI is that it cuts this knot. It enables you to accommodate consumerization of IT, accommodate user control, while you still have, without relinquishing, control over the work environment. So VDI delivers on this promise, and Windows Server 2012 is providing an infrastructure, a scalable infrastructure that's easy to manage, and also delivers the VDI experience in a high-fidelity user experience. So we're going to talk about how we're doing that in Server 2012. In Server 2012, the key technology that enables Microsoft VDI is remote desktop services. So remote desktop services, what you used to call a long time ago terminal services, now incorporates VDI as well as sessions. Now, what is remote desktop services bringing for you? We are offering a single unified infrastructure, a single integrated infrastructure, and we are offering a single high-fidelity user experience while giving you the choice of three different deployments. What are these three deployments? Well, sessions. So this is, you know, RDSH, RD session host servers configured in a farm, multiple users connecting to each server. So it's inherently a multiple, many-to-one type of an environment. That's, you know, the first option. The second option, pooled VMs. This is similar to sessions in the sense that the VMs, the members of this collection, they're identically configured. They have the same software. But unlike the session scenario, unlike that deployment option, it's a one-to-one scenario. One user uses one VM. And finally, the personal VM scenario, where one VM is dedicated to a user. So the user always uses the same VM, and this VM is a fully stateful VM that kind of captures the user data. These are the three deployment options. Now, the great thing about RDS and Server 2012 is that these three options are available from the same infrastructure. They're available under the same roof. You can have, you can have a couple of terminal server farms, a couple of, session collections, and then you can have a few pool VM collections and a personal desktop collection, all supported from the same RDS infrastructure. So let's drill into how we do that. The first key thing that we focused on in Server 2012 is the efficiency of the management. How simple is RDS to deploy? How simple is VDI to deploy? How effectively, how easily can you expand to scale as your infrastructure needs to grow to accommodate your growing needs? And how intuitive is it to manage on a day-to-day basis? So in terms of the simplicity, the ease of deployment, how many of you have seen a quick deploy, a quick start for VDI? Wow, not a lot of people. Okay, well, so you can set up a VDI deployment from beginning to end, a functioning VDI deployment, within minutes, literally in minutes. And it doesn't stop there. All the key things that you would need to do, for example, create new collections, new VM pools, or add servers, expand your infrastructure, even more advanced things like setting high availability, these are all handled with end-to-end wizards in the administration tool in Windows Server 2012. The admin tool that's built into Server Manager, it's a unified single pane of glass. It's a unified console. So compared to WS08 R2, for example, where we had different tools for each of our RDS roles, there was one tool for RDS Gateway, a couple of different tools for Terminal Server, and crucially, each tool was scoped to a single server. Now, in Server 2012, we have eliminated this duplicity, this multiple tools paradigm, and instead we shifted to a single tool paradigm, following the big bet that Windows Server 2012 has already made, which is Server Manager is able to manage multiple servers at the same time, an entire deployment at the same time. We took, in RDS, we took that a step further, and in addition to managing multiple servers at the same time, all the servers in your deployment, in your RDS deployment, we also integrated this management into a scenario-focused design. So rather than reaching out to individual servers to manage them, you set up a scenario, and the system will take care of setting up each of the servers in conjunction with one another. For example, you want to publish an application from an RDSH collection, session collection. Great, you publish the application, and the system will take care of modifying and managing each of the terminal servers, each of the RDSH hosts, that need to participate in that. It will modify the RD web access interface to accommodate the new published application. Now, this is in terms of the UI admin tools, but the same thing is true in terms of automation as well. In Server 2008 R2, we had a PowerShell interface that was focused on each server role and would be able to manage each server. Now, in 2012, our PowerShell interface focuses on the entire deployment, runs at the broker, and has a full scope over the entire RDS deployment. Now, VDI is about VMs, so streamlining VM management was also a key objective. So we manage VMs through the master images now. You use the master image, the gold image, the master VM template, to create VMs for pooled VMs or for the personal VMs. In the case of pooled VMs, you can use the master VM to patch and recreate, reissue these VMs. For personal VMs, that option is not available because personal VM is dedicated to an end user. But even there, to avoid the patch storm problem, we queue the VMs and ensure that they perform their maintenance activities in a maintenance window that you designate. And finally, there are a lot of kind of infrastructure, kind of core platform type of improvements that we made in VM management, like fast sysprep or improving the logon time, so that the end-to-end VM management experience is a good one. So now, at this point, I want to turn over to Adam to kind of give you a glimpse of how this works.
All right. Can you guys hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. Okay. So what you're looking at here is this is a brand new machine. I basically installed it. I did enable Hyper-V because that saves me a reboot down the road in just a little bit. But I haven't configured anything else. This is what the new Server Manager UI looks like. You can see that the Windows guys influenced us with the whole Metro kind of look and feel of it, or garish colors, however you prefer to call it. When I'm ready to do remote desktop services deployment or a VDI deployment, we can do that all and manage it all right from here. Server 2008 R2, you guys, you know, a lot of hands went up. You guys know there's different MMC consoles for everything that you do. You configure everything in different places. But let me show you how easy it is just to get things up and running using just a Microsoft, just a Server 2012 solution. Right here, I'm going to take this obvious choice of add roles and features. Gives me a little splash screen here. And I have a couple of choices here. I can do role-based or feature-based installation. This looks the same as what you saw in Server 2008 R2. I'll get a big list of features. I just check boxes next to the ones that I want. And I can manually configure everything. The other new option we have here is remote desktop services installation. And as you can see, it tells me I can use that to do VDI or remote desktop sessions, which we used to call terminal services. I don't know if everybody got the memo. People are confused sometimes when I say sessions. We mean what we used to call terminal services. Everybody knew what terminal services was, so we changed the name. Now we call it session hosting. Anyway, I digress. Remote desktop services installation is what we're going to do. And I have two choices here, a standard deployment or a quick start. Now, who was in one of my other sessions where I did quick start? Was there a couple of hands? Okay. Really, here's the difference. If I do standard deployment, it prompts me for multiple, it lets me put all the roles on different servers. If I want my web access on one server, my gateway on another, my broker on another one, and I want a couple of machines to use as virtualization hosts, it lets me specify all those separately. And then it stops there. If I pick quick start, I basically will just select one machine, it'll install and configure all the services on that machine, and if I do VDI, it will also create a VDI pool based on a gold template image. I'll go ahead and do a quick start here, but we can show you either down at the booth. If you really want to see a standard deployment, it's basically the same thing. It just asks you where to put stuff instead of putting it all on one machine. So we have the choice. Do I want to do VDI or sessions? We'll do VDI because that's kind of the new thing in Server 2012. Here it's asking, which machine do you want? I'm going to put everything on whatever one machine you specify, and I'm just going to choose my local machine here. And it's going to do an inspection on this machine now and find out what's already configured there. Is Hyper-V already installed? Is IIS already installed? Is the machine a member of a domain? Do I have the permissions that I need in order to do an installation here? And then, once it's verified all that, it'll come back and the next question it's going to ask me is, okay, you said you wanted to do VDI, so where's that gold image that you want to use? What's the machine you want to use as the basis for your VDI deployment? And as we mentioned, it's going to create a VM pool, so that means that's just one machine. Every time somebody logs in, they'll get that base template. When they log out, we're going to discard any changes they made to that template. We're going to wipe it off. So if they had files saved locally, they're discarded. It's kind of like a hotel room. When you go into a hotel room, it looks one way. They give you whatever hotel room is available next. They put you in it for the week. When you leave, they reset everything back to the way it was before you came. That's what a VM pool is like. Compared to a personal VM, which is like your office. You configure it the way you want. When you leave and come back, it still looks the way you left it. I don't know if that analogy works for people or not. Anyway, so here's where it's prompting me for the machine I want to use. I've already got this VHD file that is our corporate Windows 8 base image, and I've sysprepped it, which is required. You'd have to sysprep it, otherwise the quick deploy will fail. And I click Next. It says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to install these services and VDI on this machine. You do check this box to say restart if you need to. And I can click Deploy here. This is the last session I'm doing this. And that's what it's going to go out and do now. And you can see a status there of what it's doing. This does take a few minutes. It's going to have to, it probably will need to do a reboot along the way. But it's really that easy. I'll come back in a little bit and show you what the end result looks like and some of the user experience. But it's that easy to get VDI up and running. What do you think? Interested? Anybody care? No? Tough crowd. Thank you.
All right. So that was quick deploy. That's the quick start. And the other scenarios, like creating a collection, adding a new server, configuring, broker for high availability, they are really not all that different from that. It's you can go step by step, and at the end, server manager will take that and start performing the task in the background, giving you status prompts or status updates as it goes through. So now, at the top, at the beginning, we said one of our goals was also to provide the best value for VDI. Now I want to touch on a few key technology areas that kind of is related to that promise. And please feel free, if you have any questions, to feel free to raise your hand and interrupt us so that we can have a more of an interactive session. So the first area that I want to touch on is the user profile disk. Now, one of the pool VMs and sessions are attractive because they are inherently a low cost, low complexity way of deploying VDI, in contrast with personal VMs. But they have a fundamental drawback, which is, like Adam was saying, when the user logs off, when they're done, well, all the changes they've made is reverted back, so they lose their personal state, personal data. User profile disk is designed to address specifically this problem. A user disk is a VHD that's mapped to a user for that collection, and it contains all the data and all the profile for that user. As the user is roaming around from VM to VM, or from RDSH server to an RDSH server in a session collection, that user's data comes with the user, and it gets mounted into each system. So this simplifies the deployment. It allows you to provide a high degree of personalization while using one of the lower cost, kind of more simpler deployment options. So now it's not like having your own personal dedicated VM. There are still things that you would need to have that you would need to use a personal VM for. Like if your users need to install applications or need to be local administrators on those VMs, personal profile disk is not going to be enough for that. But for a majority of the cases, for typical knowledge workers, the personalization that you get from personal user profile disk is more than adequate. Yes, there's a question here. So the question is, what is the difference between user disk and roaming user profile and folder redirection? We have a slide on that, and I'm going to drill into that in just a few minutes. So the second area, fair share. In any environment, in any pool resource where multiple users are sharing the infrastructure, you have the concern that one of the users is going to hog the all the resources, and the remaining users are going to be starved of resources, CPU, disk, network. Fair share is designed to resolve this problem. And the way it does that is by kicking in when there is resource contention, when the system is low on CPU or when the system is getting pressure for network or disk. It doesn't kick in prior to that. So if you have provisioned your infrastructure adequately so that you would never run out of resources, fair share doesn't create an additional overhead or keep those users that need more CPU bound to a cap. But if there is resource contention, then it kicks in to throttle that resource that's in contention and, throttle those users that are using too much, pull them back. Now, Hyper-V obviously does this with VMs as a part of the hypervisor platform. But also RDSH does this for sessions, and it's integrated into the kernel, and it's incredibly responsive and comes at a very little cost in terms of additional CPU overhead. Now, storage is an area that saw a lot of improvement in Server 2012. We work with direct attached storage, Hyper-V having its own local disks. We work with network attached storage, SMB, centralized storage over SMB. And obviously, we work with clustered SAN storage. The key thing that we focused on is to give you maximum configuration options so that you can optimize a multi-tiered storage architecture if you want to and get the highest IOPS without increasing the cost of your storage infrastructure. And finally, high availability. We're going to drill into these in a little bit, but high availability was also a key focus area. So active broker is something that we support right now in Server 2012, and I'm going to get into the details of that in a few minutes. But also, RDS VDI is built on top of Hyper-V, and the Hyper-V and clustering, the hypervisor platform in Server 2012 is an enterprise scale hypervisor virtualization platform. So, if you want to have a cluster of 64 nodes with 4,000 VMs and you want to put RDS VDI on top of that, we're absolutely fine with that. We would work with that just fine. with Server 2008 R2 SP1, you know, dynamic memory support, it's there and it's enhanced. It increases the density that you would get with VDI. And finally, there is, on equivalent hardware, sessions still give you a better density compared to VMs on for similar scenarios. We're observing 2 times or 3 times better density with sessions compared to VMs. So if you have a scenario where sessions is adequate for what you need, you can definitely opt for that option and reduce the cost and increase your density, increase your scale tremendously. So let's drill into some of these functions and features. Adam, take it.
Okay. So we'll just I'll start by checking in on the installation that we started. You can see it's working its way through. It's got all the services installed. It's created the desktop. It's taken that template that I provided and created a virtual machine from that. And now it's creating the replicas to put in the pool. We won't wait for it to finish, but I just wanted to check in and show you that it was working. And I'll switch to one that has finished. So here's a second machine, and you can see that this one now has Hyper-V, IIS, which we use for the remote desktop web gateway, and remote desktop services. It's got these new icons here I can access. If I go into remote desktop, you can see it's created a little diagram here to show me which services are configured. And it's got a list of collections. The QuickVM collection is the one that's created for you automatically as part of that quick start. It creates it with just one machine in the pool. It's very easy for me here to say one machine in a VM pool isn't very useful. We need, you know, 10 machines, for example. And if I hit next, I get prompted. If I had multiple virtualization hosts here, I could tell it the split, put half on one machine, half on another. And it would go and create additional replicas of that virtual machine. But for purposes of our demo, it just creates one. And as I said, it put it all on one machine. If I do decide I want to scale that out, I want to add additional virtualization hosts, additional machines running servers running Hyper-V that I want to host VMs on, I can simply add them from here. Same with the web gateway. If I want to add additional machines to a web farm, I can do that. I've done a few things here. I've also done quick deploy for sessions, which automatically creates a session, and it automatically just picks a couple of apps and publishes them so you can see what some remote apps look like as well, where instead of delivering a whole desktop from a remote session, we just deliver apps. They run and look, you know, like they're running locally. I'll show you a little bit more in a second, but let's start with web access and show what that looks like. So the web gateway is one way that users can access their remote desktops and apps. And in the past, it required an ActiveX control, so really only worked from IE. But just to show that we fixed that, I'm going to access the gateway from Chrome. So it's just the server name /rdweb is created for you automatically. I will log in here. And you can see a couple of things. The QuickVM collection that we created is available to me. Those applications that were published as remote apps are available. I've also created a personal VM collection with just one machine in it for someone for another demo. But if I click one of these because I'm in, because it's in Chrome, it downloads the .rdp file. Windows knows what to do with a .rdp file, which is launch it. And so what it's doing now, I'm back on the server, created a remote desktop session for me, launching, and it's going to deliver just calculator to me. And it's going to, okay, it's still logging me in. All right. The nice thing is when I create sessions, so there's calculator. So it looks like it's running here locally. It's actually running in a session on the terminal server, on the remote desktop session host server. The nice thing is now that I've got one app running, if I launch another application, fires up much more quickly because it launches it in the same session. I know this is really the admin demo, so I won't spend a whole lot of time here. The nice thing is, if I disconnect my open sessions, they're still running on the server. We didn't close those apps. They're still running on the server. So if I launch WordPad again, because now maybe I've gone home, it fires up. And notice it knew I had other applications also running in that same session, so it delivered those back to me as well. So if I'm working on remote apps and I've got intermittent network connectivity, or I'm switching from machine to machine, I don't lose my sessions. That is configurable, by the way, as administrators. You can say as people, you know, disconnect sessions so you don't end up with orphaned ones, or time them out after an hour or a day. But very easy to, very easy way to serve up applications for users that way. Let's go back to the admin console and show you some of the other stuff. I teased it out a little bit. As I said, I've got a couple of different things here. We've got this VM collection, which is a VM pool, and we've actually provided it to one particular user group. So anybody that's in this domain user group is able to access this VM pool. When I create a personal VM collection, I have the option, again, because we're assigning these to an individual. When I create personal VMs, I actually assign the user. This user should always get redirected back to this VM. The broker service takes care of that delivery for you. And the other thing we've configured here with our Quick VM collection, I've enabled user profile disks, as Samim talked about. All you need to do is provide it with a share, create a share on a server somewhere. When you enable user disk, it'll actually make sure that it's got all the right permissions that it needs on that share. And it's keeping just a VHD file there. There is really just the /user/Adam directory. And whenever I connect to a new VM, it just mounts that on top of the VM. It's seamless. I don't see it happening. But if I save things to my documents directory on the C drive, next time I log in, even though we discard that VM pool session, my data is still there because we'll just mount that into the next machine next time I connect in. There was a question about kind of how does this compare to folder redirection and roaming user profiles. The user disks are limited to just a collection and just this collection. So if I'm accessing multiple collections or multiple, or sometimes I'm on a physical machine and sometimes I'm on a VDI image, the user disk only works in the VDI image or the session host image. And it'll work in conjunction. You can still use roaming user profiles and folder redirection with VDI as well, but this is another way to easily deliver that kind of state maintenance for users. Let me show you how to create new collections, because that kind of gets glazed over when you do a quick deploy. So I have the option, is it sessions or virtual desktop I want to create? Let's create a new virtual desktop collection. So it does walk me through a few extra steps that we didn't see before. First, what do you want to call this new collection? Next question it asks is, okay, is this a pooled collection or a personal collection? Doesn't really matter for purposes of this demo. We'll do a pooled one. You can see if I do personal, it changes a few things. Doesn't support user profile disks for personal VMs because you don't need them. You're always going back to the same VM anyway. And I have it. If I keep this box checked for it to automatically create and manage the VMs, then it does it all for me. I don't have to go in and manually do all that maintenance. So the next thing it asks is, where's that virtual desktop template? What it's actually asking me to do is previously gone into Hyper-V server, created a new virtual machine with a sysprepped desktop image in it. It's probably going to tell me that mine are all in use. It's smart enough to know when I'm already using one, it won't let me reuse it. Nope. What it probably will do is tell me that one's already being used for something else, but that's okay. So basically, I just create a virtual machine. And whatever RAM settings and hard drive settings and things I create for that virtual machine, it's going to replicate for all of the VDI images that it creates. So it's going to go through and ask me a couple of other things. Because we sysprepped this image, and it'll only accept an image that I've sysprepped for redeployment, it does ask me how I want to handle those sysprep questions that normally come up the first time you boot. I can give it an answer file, or if I haven't created an answer file, because that's a lot of reading, seriously, if you've had to create one before, the basic questions I can just answer for it here. What's the default time zone I want this VM in? What Active Directory do I want to join? Is there an OU that I want to have the virtual machines created in? Which users have permission to access this virtual machine? Which groups do I want to be able to access this image? And then what's the naming scheme? How do I want to name the machines? So if we want all the machine names to start with TechEd, we can do that, and that'll be the DNS names for the machines. Next question, similar to what we saw earlier, how many machines do you want? How many people we got in here? 600? I'm not really going to create them. I can put any number in there I want. It's going to struggle with that. It's not going to let me do it. I don't have enough RAM to support 600. Yeah, it's because it knows this machine's only got 32 gig, and they're each 2 gig machines, so it stopped me. Well, let me create them all. But if I had multiple servers, I could just split them across multiple servers. It's already, wow. What did I do?
I think actually what's going on here is you said two to be created, and you allocated one.
Oh, so I have to have at least
two. Here you would have, if you had multiple hosts.
I skipped the part where it said how many you want to create. That was on the previous, I glazed over it, yeah. If I had multiple servers, this is how I split them out. That's a good thing you're here. Okay, now here's the question. As Samin mentioned, we get to choose, you can use whatever type of storage you like. We can say, put those virtual machines on the local direct attached storage. Maybe we've got some solid state drives in there that we can keep those parent files on. Maybe we've got a network share that's highly available so we know all the machines can access it. If you're taking advantage of the new cluster shared volumes in Windows Server 2012, we can use them there. And again, I can specify, I can place the template in a local location, in a different type of location as well. I can, lots of control over where I put them. And again, it's going to prompt me, do I want to go ahead and enable user disk now? I can do it now or I can do it later. And then it will go out now if I click create, and it'll create that new VM pool. Automatically, it's got all the sysprep answers it needs and everything to create that new pool. So very easy to get collections up and running. If you've got existing collections, I should point out here in the with this session, we published applications. So you saw where we published just some applications specifically. Very easy to turn that on and off as well. I should note, if you're using a session host for publishing apps, you can't publish desktops from there. So you choose one or the other for a particular collection. What this is actually doing right now, it's looking at that session host, finding all the applications that are installed, and it's just going to give me a pick list, and I can check boxes next to the applications that I want to publish. Since that host really is a server, I haven't configured anything for it. It's the default accessories is pretty much what is here, which is why I like things like Paint were previously selected. So I just pick the applications. Were Office installed here? It'd be on this list. I would just check the box for Office, make that published. So we showed user disk. Oh, here's some of the other things. One of the questions that often comes up is, how do you patch? How do I take care of patching? Oh, okay, here's a question, then I'll talk about patching. Is it possible to publish the Link client with voice? You're really asking a different question, huh? You're really saying, is Link supported in remote desktop sessions? And the answer to that is partly. With Office 2012 and Link, the instant messaging client for Link is supported. Voice over IP is supported with a USB handset. So you got to have a headset or a handset to do the voice on. We can't just use redirect the speaker mic stuff. And we don't support audio or we don't support video over a remote desktop session. Now with Server 2012, we made some enhancements that makes that experience better, provided that the voice over IP providers like Link choose to support that. Their existing products won't. The products will need to be updated. So, it's up to the Link team to decide if they're going to support that functionality to make Link a more robust or a more like the local experience in a remote session. That answer your question? Talk to me afterwards. Another question? So, okay, when I created the VM here and it prompted me to assign a user to it, is that the same setting as the Active Directory setting that where I assign a user to a VM in Active Directory?
So, that's an interesting question. So, you're referring to the way it was in Windows Server 2008 R2, where we had a tab for assigning personal desktop VMs to users. This infrastructure does not make use of that, and that tab and that way of assigning personal desktops is now deprecated. We don't use that data. We don't write into that data anymore. So it's completely independent from that.
Still exists in AD world, but we're not, if you're using 2012, it's not using that data at all. Yeah. All these assignments and things are stored in the broker database?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that tab in 2012, Windows Server 2012 AD, that tab is gone.
Okay, let me talk a little bit about patching, because that's always with physical desktops. That's a big reason people go to VDI, right? It was too hard to physically patch all those desktops. So there's a couple of things we do to enhance patching. One of them is if I've got a pooled VM template, so everything's using that same base image all the time, I have the ability to refresh that template. So let's take a scenario. We've got VDI deployed out everywhere, and then a service pack comes out. We want to apply that service pack. What I do is create a new base image, or I take my existing, you know, base corporate image that I use, apply that service pack to it, and sysprep that, create it as a new VM, and then I just come in here and say, hey, here's my new gold image. I need to replace the images in this pool with this new gold image that I've created. And it'll come in here and let me select that, and then I have the option of choosing, how do we do that? Do we want to log every user off immediately and apply this new image everywhere? Do we want to say, as users log off, the next time they log in, offer them the new image? So let's say that this QuickMaster VM is my new image. It's got the latest service packs, antivirus signatures in it. This is the one I want my users to start using now. So select that, and it says, okay, when, this is the question where it asks, when do you want to apply that? Do you want to say, hey, just start at midnight tonight as users log off. The next time they log on, give them the new image instead. We want to say, look, we need to change it right now. Something was horribly wrong with our previous image. So just log everybody off, replace all the images now. We can do that. And then it's the confirmation and goes ahead. And if I hit create, it'll replace the image with that new one across all of those virtual machines. If you've got personal VMs, and those really you manage like physical desktops, you've got to have some way to get patches out to those machines. Because once you've, other than providing the initial image, those are going to change over time because users have their own image and they're going to do their own things to it. If you've worked with VDI much, you start to get into these scenarios of patch storms, right? If you've got Windows Update running at 2 a.m., you've got 100 machines running on one server, they all patch and reboot at once, and there goes your server I/O and CPU for the next hour and a half while they all try to get rebooted and contend for resources at the same time. Server 2012 and Windows 8, there's an algorithm that runs on those machines. If you're running ConfigMan or you're running Windows Update, they will randomly stagger their start times. So instead of everybody kicking off the install and reboot at once at 2 a.m., they'll stagger that to spread it out a little bit so that it doesn't happen all at once. So a little bit smarter way to do patching and a way to avoid some of those patch storms that often come up. I'll do one other thing and then I'll pass back to Samim. I showed here how easy it is to add, for example, additional virtualization host servers, additional remote servers, web access, easy to add more machines to the farm. The connection broker has always been a single point of installation. We always just had one broker because it was holding so much real-time data. It's the one keeping track of which users are logged in, where do they have existing sessions, what VM is this user assigned to, and which server is that VM on. We have the ability in Server 2012 to configure high availability here. And look, it's pretty much that easy. It says, you want to do high availability? Give me a highly available SQL server. I give it the connection string to a SQL server that I've already got running. Presumably it's highly available because I've got good DBAs that made it that way for me. I just configure this. The broker will start using that database. At that point, I can create multiple brokers, point them all at that database. Now I've got a completely highly available system, no single point of downtime. All right, I'll turn it back to you. I'll switch back to you.
All right. So that's a lot of new stuff. So this is probably a familiar diagram to many of you. Remote desktop services component architecture, as you can see, there are multiple different role services components coming together to provide the VDI scenario, the remote desktop scenario. And it's a very typical three-tier architecture. You know, we have a front end, we have a back end. In the back end, the kind of the workhorse, the workload carrying server roles, remote desktop virtualization host, which is an extension to Hyper-V, which allows us to host client SKU VMs and run remote apps or remote desktops on them and configure, you know, pool VM collections or personal VM collections on them. Remote desktop session host, terminal server, the old faithful, the, you know, trusted, the one that's been around for a very, very long time. And again, you know, can support a farm configuration run remote apps and desktops. On the front end, these are your edge facing, internet facing, remote access roles. So RD web access, which presents the UI that Adam was demonstrating, and also provides a feed, a web feed, an XML feed from which you can, you know, devise other downstream scenarios, right? Applications that would consume that feed and present the UI to the user of selecting which application or which desktop to launch. And RD Gateway that transitions from an internet-facing, you know, internet client through into the CorpNet and does that securely like a firewall. And finally, at the middle, you know, we have a remote desktop connection broker. This is the traffic cup of the system. That, you know, everything kind of goes through there, connections bounce through there, and every other server role is managed through there. We obviously also have the remote desktop licensing service, which manages the client access licenses for the deployment. Now, Adam was mentioning personal pool VMs, and there are different ways of, you know, they are good for different scenarios, and they work slightly differently. I want to kind of drill into that, and if you have any questions about this, please feel free to interrupt and ask me. So personal VMs, pool VMs, there are a lot of similarities, but there are some key differences. In terms of creating the VMs, both personal VMs and pool VMs, they get created in bulk from a gold image, like Adam was showing. But in the case of a personal VM, the VM that gets created is a full clone of that gold image, whereas in the pool VM, it's a diff disk from that gold image. So in the pool VM scenario, you have a collection of child VMs, child VHDs that are all chaining up to the parent VHD. In terms of update and patch, like Adam was describing, you know, personal VMs have to be updated individually. And in the default Windows server, you know, Windows updates, we integrate with Windows updates so that we can actually queue the updates over a maintenance window rather than allow all the VMs to wake up at the same time and you know, create a patch storm. In the case of pool VMs, you use the gold image, you roll a new version, and the system takes care of recreating the VM. Importing existing VMs is fully supported in personal VMs. So personal VMs over time, you know, kind of diverge anyway, and they become very unique, different VM images. When you import VMs, that's how you would start anyway. So personal VM collections, importing VMs into them is fully supported. In the pool VM collection case, if you import VMs into it, a typical scenario where you would want to do that is where you have some other tools that you're using for VM creation. You know, let's say, you know, System Center VMM. And in that case, the system expects you to use the same tools for recreation and updates as well. So update and patch functionality, what Adam was demonstrating with the VM template, if you import existing VMs into a pool VM collection, that functionality is disabled. In terms of personalization, each user is automatically assigned a dedicated VM in the personal desktop scenario, personal VM collection, and they can be local admin, so this gives the ultimate kind of personalization experience, whereas pool VM, whatever is available from user disk, user profile disk, is what the level of personalization that's available. And VMs roll back when the users log off, so any changes that they make, even if they were able to install any applications, will be lost. This reduces the personalization, but it's also a great thing because that means that these pooled VMs, their configuration does not drift. Whatever you set up at the beginning, based on your gold image, that's what they're gonna use through the lifetime of the VM. So finally, in terms of typical use cases, the personal VM collection is really appropriate for a high-end desktop, for high-end knowledge workers, or you know, development and test where they need admin access to the VM, or you know, engineering workstations where they need like local installations and much deeper access to the operating system. Whereas pooled VMs, you know, knowledge workers, typical knowledge workers and centers are appropriate here, and also legacy app hosting. Since this is an a VM environment, applications that require a particular operating system run great here. Now, there was a question about user profile disk, the benefits of user profile disk being available for sessions as well as pooled VMs, and it stores all user data. It's a container for roaming user profile, for folder redirection cache, and for UEV. It's actually at a level in the system that is underneath all these technologies. It appears as a locally mounted disk to the applications and to the operating system running inside the VM or running inside the terminal server. So as a result, applications that normally would refuse remotely mounted data, like, you know, for example, Outlook would not load a PST file that's on an SMB share, but if it's on a user disk, it works just fine because it appears as a local disk to the application. So what should you deploy? Well, user profile disk, we recommend that you turn it on for all pooled VM collections and for all RDSH collections, for all session collections. There's really no downside, and the only thing you need is a file share. You don't even really need like a SAN or a particularly performant file share. You just need a file share on which you can put a VHD file, and it gets mounted as a VHD. UEV, if you want to roam settings that across multiple collections, since user disk is scoped to a single collection, if you need to do roaming across multiple collections or between the VDI environment and physical, then UEV folder redirection come into the picture and they become appropriate. And also, obviously, you can use folder redirection for backup. User profile disk is not really intended for these use cases and, you know, works with these technologies so that the combination of all of them would give you a better result at the end. Now, we talked about storage options. There's a lot that's new in 2012. Storage spaces, SMB3, Hyper-V SMB support, these are all, they really raise the bar in terms of virtualized storage. And the key thing is, you know, we support all of them. As long as, you know, whatever works as a virtualized storage backend for Hyper-V, RDS works on that just fine. Like I was saying, VDI storage configuration, direct attached storage is always an option. It's the cheapest option, Hyper-V server with its own disks. It's also kind of the least flexible. If you require more flexibility, central SMB is a great option because it gives you the benefit of centralized storage, so you can manage your storage centrally, but it's not as expensive. It could be a lot cheaper than using a SAN. For example, in this picture here, I have a very simplified diagram of a deployment where, you know, I have a Hyper-V cluster with 8 nodes, and my storage is coming from a scale-out file server cluster with 4 nodes. So SMB3 is how, you know, my Hyper-V cluster is accessing the VMs that are hosted on this scale-out file server. And I'm using spaces here. I have disks of different speeds and quality, different IOPS. I'm using spaces to make all my SSDs appear as a single disk, all my 15K RPM disks appear as a single disk, etc. And the reason why I group things this way is so that I can use CSV, cluster storage volume, to mount one volume out of my SSDs, and I'm going to use that for my parent VHD. Parent VHD requires highest IOPS. So I want to put it on probably this SSD. It doesn't have a lot of storage, but it's probably the most performant storage I have. So I want to put my parent VHD there. In contrast, my individual VMs, I want to put on the 15K because, you know, they don't require as much IOPS. And the user disk, I can put on the 10K because they probably require the maximum amount of space, but the IOPS is even less for user disks. So this gives you options to kind of tier your storage in a way so that you get the highest aggregate IOPS while minimizing your total cost. There's a question here. The question is it possible to gain access to USB devices from the remote desktop session? Absolutely, yes. So you're talking about end users, client, attached to the client. Yes, use USB devices. We're going to actually talk about that a little later. USB devices are accessible to in the target. And one key improvement is that in the past, that used to require GPU virtualization. So it was only available for RemoteFX GPU virtualized VMs. But now it's available across the board for RDSH as well as VDI. There's a question in the back. The question is, which scenarios of VDI are possible with free Hyper-V SKU? All scenarios are possible. So in this picture, for example, the RDVH role would install on the free Hyper-V SKU, and every VDI scenario is fully supported on the free Hyper-V SKU. Well, for RDSH, for session host, you need Windows Server standard running, right? So that part, for that, but you can obviously run RDSH as a VM on a Hyper-V, free SKU. Yep. Can you repeat it? What kind of cards? PKI cards, so smart cards.
Smart.
Yes. So the question is, can we use smart cards for authentication in all VDI? Absolutely. Smart card redirection is supported in as a part of RDP RemoteFX, so it will be available in every scenario. Cool. So high availability. I'm going to kind of actually Adam kind of already talked through and described this case. But the key thing here is, without an active configuration, the broker service was the only one that did not support a farm, active mode, high availability clustering structure. All the other roles did this in WSO8. In fact, terminal server since WSO3. Connection Broker is a service with a database backend. So the way we configure high availability is by mounting it, by connecting it to an actual SQL database. Without a SQL database, it uses the internal WIT database in Windows Server. And like you saw, the way to configure it is actually pretty slick. So GPU choices, there was a couple of questions that were related to that. And, let's spend a little time talking about this. So in Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 with the first version of RemoteFX, we had the ability to surface a GPU device inside a VDI VM. But this was only available if you use a physical GPU in your host and use the RemoteFX GPU virtualization feature. And it was also only available for VDI VMs, for VM-based desktops. Now in 2012, Windows Server 2012, a GPU device is available in every session and in every VM. So even in the session-based desktop virtualization scenario, there is a GPU device available to applications. Now, in those cases, it is a software GPU device that provides 3D capabilities. It's a DirectX 11 software GPU device, otherwise known as the Warp device. It had this code name. So it provides enough of a capability for, knowledge worker scenarios, office, web browsing, Windows, animations in the Metro UI, et cetera. And it's also a very highly scalable GPU device. But if you need something that is more performant, an application that really requires 3D capability, something like a CAD application would need, then for that we still support the vGPU, the virtualized GPU, where you can provide a physical GPU on the Hyper-V hosts and virtualize that device so that it appears as a physical GPU on all of the VMs, the VDI VMs. This provides for the best 3D experience for applications that are really graphics intensive. The difference in terms of for knowledge worker scenarios, in terms of office, web browsing, Windows, etc., it wouldn't be that perceptible, but still it's a higher quality experience there as well. And another key difference is that there is improved application compatibility, because when we do virtualize GPU this way, the session appears as a console session to applications as opposed to a remote session. So applications that kind of automatically throttle themselves down when they recognize they're running in a remote session. In this case, they recognize they're running in a console session, so they don't throttle themselves down. These are the type of applications that would actually require the intensive 3D capability in the first place. So this is a key change in Windows Server 2012. In the past, USB redirection, there was a question about that, was tied to the GPU virtualization. It isn't anymore. It's part of the base platform now. Let's see. Do you want to take it over from here?
Yeah, sure. So there was a session yesterday that talked about kind of the user experience, and I can do a couple of those demos today if people are interested. But I just want to clarify, as Samim said, in Server 2008 R2 SP1, boy, we have some great names, we had this remote FX technology, which really just referred to, I've got GPUs in the servers that I can enable within my VMs, or virtualize so that my VMs can share that GPU. And there were a few other things that came along with that, like USB redirection, which is a funny connection to make in your head. But if I have GP graphics cards in my server, then I can use USB devices remotely. Anyway, so a couple changes. One is remote FX. When you hear us talk about that with regards to Server 2012, it's the whole user experience. vGPU is just one part of that. It's also USB redirection. It's great new WAN performance. It's the other things on this list, support for multi-touch. Single sign-on. We call all of those things remote FX now. They don't require a vGPU. You can put it in if you've got some specific 3D apps or high video-intensive apps. We'll take advantage of that graphics card, but it's not necessarily required to enable some of this other functionality. Lots and lots of improvements for WAN performance. We do some really intelligent things with the codecs now in terms of looking at what the content is and compressing it appropriately. We dynamically detect your network connection speeds. And adjust on the fly how we're delivering the user experience to support that. Yeah, question. Is it configurable? Yes. We give you lots of good ways you can configure that. Out of the box, it just sort of it does its own balancing and tuning. But if you say, you know what, no matter how slow the connection is, I need pixel by pixel replication of the graphics. Don't ever compress them because they're medical images. You can enable that. Or you can say treat everything as a low-speed or high-speed connection. We give you lots of control over how you can tune that experience. Another question? Support for multiple screens is there, yes. Four, eight? So up to four screens. And the res.
Yeah, yeah. So up to eight screens, and it's in there for RDPA.
Yeah. Oh, you had a slide on it.
We had a slide on that.
Okay. Did you want to talk about it?
No, you already talked through it.
I talked about it. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So group policies let you do all that tuning. That was how did I do that? I'm like magic. I talked about a slide I didn't even know was up there. We do some balancing. I can show you a little bit of what that dynamic tuning looks like. The internet was down yesterday in the session, so we didn't get to do some of those dynamic demos. But if we have some time today, I can show you some stuff. Another question? Can you say it one more time? Are they user or computer policies?
These GPs are they are machine policies. So they're intended to apply to either an entire RDSH server or the VM.
So if you need it, yeah. So is it just because you want it, certain users you want regardless of what they connect to that to always be the same experience or? So based on, it does that out of the box. It will just determine the network connection speed and adjust it appropriately if it's on a slow connection.
So the key thing I would suggest is there is a lot of performance counters and there's also measurements of the user experience for remote FX. The default experience is going to try to strike a balance between scale and bandwidth that would really work for vast majority of the cases. So if I would suggest to zero in on those performance counters to see where your problem is and then try to apply a particular configuration for that case.
Yep. Are we able to benchmark the WAN traffic? So funny story about that. some of our competitors' licensing agreements specifically do not give you permission to publish benchmarks without their permission. Sometimes it's hard to get their permission if they don't look as good as they would like to in those results. So I encourage you to do your own performance testing. There are some third parties that are doing some testing as well. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised, especially if you worked with RDP in the past and saw what the WAN performance was like. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with the improvements. There was a question here. We'll take two more questions, and I'll jump back to some demo. Okay, so if I have just particular applications I want to target to users, do I have to do that in the gold image? You do it per collection, so either a session host server or VDI collection is where you specify those applications and the permissions for which users have access to them. Makes sense. Okay, I think there was one more. Yep.
In the past, you have worked very closely with Citrix and recommended their product. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the question is about Citrix and the partnership with Citrix. Citrix continues to be a strong partner of ours. We're offering a set of functionality out of the box now that's improved from where it was in the past. There's still some valid reasons to go to partners. We don't offer clients for non-Windows devices directly from Microsoft. So you'd look to a partner, Citrix or somebody else, to do that. Certain management scenarios, they leverage ConfigMan, for example, Configuration Manager, to do a lot of the patching and managing of Zenapp applications and things like that. So depending on your use case scenario, there are still some things that you would consider using partners for.
So regarding the question about restricting access to applications, I just wanted to see if this is what you meant. Switch to ThinkPad.
No, you want comp.
Oh, is that comp?
Comp. That's what I mean. Yeah.
All right.
And then hit take.
So
I'll hit take. Where's take?
All right. Here we are. So, so when you have an application, one of the properties is which users will see that application, and you can specify particular users and filter that down. I don't know if this is exactly what you meant or if you meant something further than that, but this is built into the application publishing experience. So your question is, do we manage licenses or if the user doesn't have licenses? Well, the system is not aware of whether or not user has licenses to calculator versus MATLAB, et cetera. So we wouldn't be able to take care of that. So it's not synchronized with any licensing scheme. Yes? So your question is it limited to just RD web access? So this is about how the user will be presented the application in RD web access or in the, in the native Metro remote desktop client or other places. This does not restrict the user from, if they have a full desktop session, it doesn't restrict the user from running the application within that full desktop session. So this is not a way to say, oh, this user, regardless of which system they log on to, do not let them run calculator. This is about this particular calculator that I published from this farm or from this collection, who can see that and who can run that.
Okay. Let's go. We've got about 10 minutes left. I'm happy to stick around afterwards and answer questions here down at the booth, but let's wrap up just a couple other slides and demos, and then we'll take some more questions.
Okay.
We just don't want to run out of time.
Do you want to do the UX demo?
Sure. You want me to do that now?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a couple demos I want to do. Oh, did I do that? Computer. I'll start with computer first. I'll switch back to where I was. So one of the things I wanted to do this demo yesterday, and the internet was down. Hopefully, it'll stick with us today. But as I said, we've made some tremendous improvements in the WAN experience of the RDP protocol. And just to show you that experience, I'm going to bring up. I've got a couple of virtual machines I've just connected to. The one on the left is Windows 7, and Windows 8 is on the right. Right now I'm connected at LAN speeds. I'm just going to bring up YouTube and start a video. And you can see over the LAN they're both pretty good. I guess I don't have... I turned off my audio. I know you guys can't hear the audio. It's not like if I do this, can you hear it? And it's echoing because they're both playing that video, actually. Right? They're both playing the audio.
10 seconds.
So we've got a couple of videos running right now, and you can see they both look pretty good. Windows 7 and Windows 8 both look great. What I'm going to do next is bring up a WAN emulator. So what happens here is when I hit the start button on this WAN emulator, it's going to drop this network speed so that each of these connections drops to a 2.5 megabit connection with about 200 milliseconds of latency. So an intercontinental connection. And what you'll see is a few things happen all at once. As soon as I hit start there, we've now dropped that network speed. And you can see the Windows 7 machine has kind of dropped into a slideshow. It's still trying to deliver every single pixel. The Windows 8 machine, it's taking it a second to figure out that it's suddenly the network conditions are not as good as they were. But you see that once it catches up and it figures out how to adjust things, it's adjusted to nearly as good an experience. The Windows 7 one is really having a hard time keeping up there, maintaining that experience. We'll stop this, drop it back up to, set it back to LAN speed so they can catch up. Just to show you that there was no trickery there. This is Task Manager. This is my network utilization. You can see where there's that big drop in the middle. That's where we dropped that network speed way down. Now that they're both running at a high speed, you can see that network connectivity that we're now using the whole LAN speeds that were available to us. We're using about 50 megabits of network. If I pause this Windows 7 one, so it's just Windows 8 on the LAN now. This is Windows 8 on the LAN. It still doesn't use nearly the network bandwidth that Windows 7 did to deliver the same level of experience.
It's an order of magnitude.
It's about 10% of the network utilization. But you can see... I want to pause this now. Don't go down that far. What do you think? I mean, that's a much better use of your bandwidth and still delivering a great user experience to users. Do I have time to do one more demo? Should I do this one?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to do one more demo that I wanted to do yesterday, but we have this anyway. Don't tell anybody I showed you this demo, okay? Because I have a fruit-flavored device up here that I'm not supposed to have. So nobody tell. Don't get me in trouble. There's three questions I can count on every time I do a session on VDI. They are you going? Do I still need Citrix? I always get that one. Can you explain the licensing to me? I always get that one. Somebody's saving it right. Somebody here was like, okay, now I can ask him. He knows it's coming. The other one I get is, what are you guys going to do for non-Windows clients? And our answer for non-Windows clients is still, we really look to partners for those other devices. But I want to show you that there are lots of options available to do that. The RDP protocol, we license. We make that available. There's a free version of it out there. If you're ambitious, you could actually go get the open source version of the protocol and compile your own client for whatever device you use. Wow, everybody's going to see my password if I do that. Everybody, I got to reset my password. Be right back. So I'm just going to go here to RD Web Access. Remember, we don't require an ActiveX control now, which means this application works in Safari just as well as it did on Chrome or IE. You can see the same list of applications published there. If I click on the Quick VM collection, downloaded that RDP file. Now, I have a program from iTap Mobile, who's a provider of RDP clients for iOS and Android. It's installed here, and it's prompting me saying, I actually know what to do with an RDP file because you have iTap installed. If I connect that, it prompts me for which set of credentials I want to use. Starting up the connection now. I'm going to connect into that same Quick VM pool that I had created earlier. Well, I hope it works. we go.
There's Windows 8.
There's the login screen.
And there's Windows 8. Yeah. Yeah.
The nice thing about, oh, I'm going to open like three browsers now because I kept clicking. You know, and the nice thing about this client from ITAP is it is, did I hit the wrong button? No, we got it. It is a remote FX client, so it'll take advantage, if you've got a GPU, for example, in your server, it will take advantage of that inside the experience. It also does great video remote. I mean, you can see we've got animation going here. Cut the Rope is a touch-enabled game, so it's kind of ideal for a touch device like this. The sound is it sounds a little choppy. I don't know if you guys are hearing it the way I am. I got my mouse set to the got it set to that. Okay. So, it's not the best office productivity app, but it is a great way to show off animations. You know, audio, touch, support. Again, they don't have an RDP 8 client, so full touch remoting, like we have available, is not perfect. But as a way to deliver line of business applications to non-Windows devices. Stop taking pictures, guys. I said not to tell anyone. What's the question? Can I play
Flash?
Flash. Can I play Flash? Oh. Can I play Flash on an iPad because right. Really I'm running Windows and Windows can run Flash, so.
So iPad is really not playing Flash.
Yeah, everything's still happening on the server. I'm just doing RDP from there. Okay, all right, I'm done demoing now.
All right. So how do you choose the right VDI deployment option? Sessions, pooled VMs, personal VMs. Well, first of all, the user experience, what Adam was just showing with the ITAP client, and those of you who saw it yesterday with the RDP 8 client with full touch remoting, completely fluid experience with 10, 20 fingers of touch if necessary. All that stuff is the same across these three models, right? Whether you host your applications and your desktops in sessions, in pooled VMs, in personal desktop VMs, the end user experience, the remote FX experience is the same. The infrastructure is also going to support all three equally. But how do you select which one, which way to go? So in terms of personalization, the kind of the winner here is the personal VM, the personal desktop VM, simply because it's a fully stateful VM. It's closest to a PC, full PC experience for the end user. Local admin, app installation, the whole nine yards. But with pooled VMs and sessions, we have the user profile list, which offers a pretty good personalization experience that will be, for many scenarios, for many end users, indistinguishable from a PC where they're not locally administrated, which is how most corporate PCs are deployed to users anyway. So in terms of personalization, we have a very good story across the board here. App compatibility, again, personal VMs and VMs in general in this case are offering the top experience, the highest degree of app compatibility. And the reason for this is that we see two very, the kind of the top two problems that hinder app compatibility on sessions. And these are not by any means very common problems, but still, the problems that we see are. There are some applications that just check for the SKU of the operating system, and when they see server, they just shut themselves down. They refuse to install. That's one category of problems, and obviously with a client SKU VM, you don't run into that problem. The second problem is there are applications that install fine on session, but when there are multiple instances of them running, there's an undefined behavior, and that either results in some failure in the application or the application crashing, et cetera. So with VMs, with pooled VMs as well as personal VMs, you don't run into those problems. Therefore, app compatibility is better. But with RDSH, it's still pretty good. Image management, sessions offers the best experience because it's a server VM. It's a server image, and there's only a single image to manage. And personal VMs is is good, but the other options are much better than personal VMs, because with personal VMs you have a separate operating system to manage for each user. You know, you have 1,000 users, you have 1,000 operating systems to manage, and you have to manage them individually. Whereas with pooled VMs, you can manage it using the gold image. And in terms of cost effectiveness, personal VMs again is not the top choice here. One obvious reason, obviously, is the amount of storage that you have to dedicate. Each VM is going to be a full clone. But there's also a more subtle reason, and that is you need to dedicate enough resources with personal VMs for the number of users you have. And you might actually only have half of your users using at a given point in time, but you have to go for 100%. Whereas with pooled VMs and with sessions, you can scale your infrastructure to the amount of usage that you're going to actually see. So if 50% of users are going to be logged in at the same time, you scale for 50%, or maybe put yourself some headroom for 60%. So depending on your scenario, the saving might be actually quite dramatic. And that's why pooled VMs do better than personal VMs in terms of cost. And sessions, obviously, the winner here, because the 2x, the 3x improvement in scale compared to VMs. So these are kind of, you know, the ways to look at these three deployment choices. Another way to look at it, Adam.
We're out of time, and I appreciate you guys staying. So let me just, when you look at costs, sessions is going to be cheaper because you've got less storage and less management because it's simpler. Because we support direct attached storage, you can save additional money there. If people really want to talk about how VDI reduces costs, come and talk to me. But we'll just leave it here and encourage you guys, please fill out the eval forms. If you've been in my previous sessions this week, please fill out those as well. Internet was down yesterday, but I really would appreciate the feedback. Let me know what you think. And
if you have any other questions, please feel free to come up.
Stick around and take questions. We'll also the VDI booth down in the expo hall. You can find us there on and off the rest of the week. Thank you all very much.
Thanks a lot.